Well, lots of key developments on hopefully the road to peace in Ukraine. Will the war come to an end? Let's summarize the key developments which have taken place and then also very significantly what the French President Emmanuel Macron has said in the last hour or so, because that's important because he seems to have a roadmap which he's conveyed in Washington to the US President. So in terms of the larger issues, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky may soon visit Washington to finalize a minerals deal with Trump. This follows intense negotiations and pressure from the U.S. administration. So what is the minerals deal? Well, the deal grants the U.S. access to Ukraine's rare earth minerals. It's a trade-off for continued military aid against Russia. Trump has reportedly floated a specific $500 billion figure as compensation for U.S. aid, which he claims reflects past support. Now, in all of this, very significantly, the U.S. has voted with Russia at the United Nations. Think about that. The U.S. has aligned with Russia in voting on two U.N. resolutions concerning Ukraine. On Monday, both nations rejected a European-supported U.N. General Assembly resolution denouncing Russia's war in Ukraine. And later, in the U.N. Security Council, they jointly endorsed a U.S.-proposed resolution urging a quick end to the conflict without naming Russia as aggressor or recognizing Ukraine's territorial sovereignty. Will European nations accept this? Well, they may not have much of a choice. Now, Putin's offer to Trump. Putin, meanwhile, has proposed a mineral deal of his own, including access to Russia's vast reserves. This aims to outbid Ukraine and sway Trump's support. So that's the overall story. But what about the French proposal? Well, in an interview to Fox News following his talks with the U.S. president, the French president, Emmanuel Macron, has said that he does see a path which could result in peace between Russia and Ukraine. The sequential steps announced by Mr. Macron include the following: a start of immediate negotiations with Russia, a truce which could be arrived at in the weeks to come, detailed negotiations which take place while this truce process is going on. The U.S., Macron says, will have a deal on rare minerals that gives the U.S., Trump, a lasting stake in Europe. That's what European nations want. This would be followed by a proper peace treaty with Russia. But guarantees, Macron says, are required if Russia ends up violating this treaty. Now, there is a French-UK proposal to send soldiers in some locations of Ukraine to maintain peace in the area. But this must be backstopped by the United States if that is required. Now, Macron claims several European countries are willing to be a part of this strategy which he's discussed. But he says that there must be a strong message from the United States to ensure that Russia accepts everything and does not resume attacks. So that's what the overall situation is. Are we well on the way to a lasting peace? Well, I'm now joined by David K. Johnston. He's a senior journalist in the United States, a Pulitzer Award-winning journalist, and also Dan Morrison, Deputy Editor World in Washington at USA Today. Thank you both very much for being with us. Mr. Johnston, let me come to you first. It's interesting what Macron has said in just the last little while, where he says that there could be a truce within the next couple of weeks. He says he's conveyed this to Trump as well. Are you as optimistic?
No, not at all, Vishnu. The proposals you're seeing come as the Russians are collapsing militarily. Russia is now using donkey carts to deliver munitions and food to the front lines, as a number of journalists have documented. The Russian military war materiel has been utterly destroyed, and casualties on the Russian side are at 800,000. That's twice what the U.S. casualties were in World War II. The current rate of more than 1,000 dead Russian soldiers per day, they'll reach a million come May. So it's really Putin here who is desperately suing for relief, and he has his friend Donald Trump, who has said he trusts Putin at his word. He doesn't trust American intelligence agencies. He trusts Vladimir Putin at his word, trying to help him. This is an astonishing and disturbing development for the U.S. to align itself with the Kremlin and against liberty.
If you use the words astonishing development, and this is to you, Dan Morrison, I found one of the most astonishing developments being Trump and the United States backing Russia in the United Nations in two proposals. Where does that leave Europe?
It leaves Europe looking for a seat at the table. And that's why that the French president made his visit. yesterday and why Keir Starmer is coming soon. Europe wants in, and the Trump administration is saying, what have you got to offer? What they're offering is peacekeepers, but those peacekeepers come with a, you know, with an asterisk. They want peacekeepers with a U.S. backstop, with the might of the U.S. military as a backup for these European peacekeepers. It's unclear if the Trump administration will agree to that, but that's what Macron wants. And he's, you know, among European leaders, he's the Trump whisperer. And that's what that was his mission here yesterday.
Mr. Johnston, the minerals deal in Ukraine, some say that this is essentially blood money, that look, we've helped you in this war. If you want us to keep going, even for the for a finite period of time, you need to agree to this. Ukraine, it appears, may not have much of a choice but to accept this, right?
May well be that that's the case. Donald, whom I've covered for 36 years and written 3.5 books about, yeah, is a very transactional fellow. He has no understanding of world politics, diplomatic issues. But what he does understand is money. And so Donald has gone with this very transactional proposal. And I'd point out that after World War II, the U.S. didn't demand reparations from Germany or Japan. Instead, the United States helped redevelop the economies of those countries to make them democratic, to ensure long-term peace. That's not how Donald sees the world. He identifies with dictators, and he has declared himself effectively to be our dictator, including the White House within the last week, putting out three images of Donald Trump with a crown on his head and the text, "Long live the king," which would be deeply offensive to all Americans who understand our history and our Constitution. And Donald does not understand those things.
Dan Morrison, it's one thing what Donald Trump says, but the U.S. President, J.D. Vance, has said, you know, a lot of things along similar lines in Europe, when at the Munich Security Conference, he essentially pulled the rug under the feet of European nations and said that the basic freedoms, which were the basis on of which the relationship between America and Europe rests, doesn't hold true anymore. Is America serious, or is Trump serious about staying away from Europe? That's been the premise of international security for all of these decades.
The Europeans are being pushed out of the United States embrace. The incoming chancellor of Germany has said that it's time for Europe to face facts and to understand that this administration really doesn't care what happens to Europe. Those are his words. And that Europe must consolidate and prepare to go it alone. The statements of the vice president last week or recently amounted to almost a culture war on Europe. It was a real declaration of principles, a real declaration of this administration's rejection of what Europe believes itself to stand for and what America believed Europe stood for. There's no question. There's a big change here.
Mr. Johnson, do you expect to see a Putin-Trump summit anytime soon? Do you think that that's something that might happen?
Well, Donald has said he wants to meet with Putin, and he will arrange a meeting with him. So I would expect there will be such a meeting. And I won't be surprised in the least if no one is in the room but Putin, Trump, and Putin's chosen translator. Trump did this in 2018 in Helsinki, having no one on the American side in the room. So we have no idea what's going on between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump.
Republican strategist joins us at this stage. Mr. Klink, how would you respond to those who say that Donald Trump may want an end to the war, and that I think everybody has agreed upon, but the way he's doing it and the search for instant solutions may not be in sync with the reality of what's happening in Europe?
Well, a couple observations. One, notice how the conversation has changed since January 21st. We're now talking about not, you know, who is going to, is Ukraine going to win this war, which was a foolish wish from the beginning. They were never going to win this war. Excuse me. That being said, what you're seeing domestically in Europe with Frederick Merz saying that they need independence from the U.S. That's rich with 50,000 American troops currently stationed on German soil, guaranteeing their alleged safety. The bottom line is that Europe has coasted and has been on essentially a free ride from the United States for decades. They're not meeting their NATO commitments in terms of funding, with rare exception. They need to up that defense. So hearing, you know, Frederick Merz talk about independence, that's just campaign rhetoric designed to bolster domestic support for last Sunday's election. I will add, though, that, you know, the domestic support to continue throwing money at Ukraine is not there in the United States. There will not be a U.S. troop guarantee. And if the Brits and the French want to put troops on the ground, let them do it. But they're not going to do it under the auspices of NATO because there won't be an Article 5 commitment from the United States to backstop. So I do think the best bet that the Ukrainians have on a going forward basis is to cut an economic deal with the United States so that we capture some of their rare earth minerals, which we certainly need, and Ukraine has ample amounts of. And look, the Biden administration, again, they started funding this effort. Support has consistently dropped month over month since the war started. And, you know, just the other day, I was looking at the maps of the war from the second attack in 2022 through to today. Essentially, what happened is the Russians attacked, they gained territory, and the Ukrainians have pushed back on a very, very small amount. So with respect to the speaker before who said that Russia is losing, it's World War One all over again. You're measuring, quote unquote, victory in yards and miles, not in massive amounts of territory. Russia could continue to do this forever. And the only thing that's happening right now is that Ukrainian young men and women are dying, as are Russian men and women. Russia has more bodies to throw at this. And to be honest, for Russia losing a million people, that's a blink of an eye for the Russians, who lost, what, 20,000 or 20 million in World War II. So, you know, look, the U.S. is committed to Russia. We've been there since 1945. The U.S. is committed to Europe. We've been there since 1945. But I do think that the relationship has changed. Europe's got to step up and meet the moment. And the U.S. is just not going to be the open checkbook for Europeans.
David K. Johnson, would you like to respond to that?
Well, I think that there's some truth in what Mr. Klink says. But the fact is that when the Russians are so stripped of war materiel that they're down to having donkey carts deliver war material to the front, when they're losing between 1,100 and 1,600 soldiers a day, not casualties, but deaths, and the Russian fleet has had to withdraw to the far end of the Black Sea, it's Russia that needs the truce here, not Ukraine. Now, we wouldn't be here had the Biden administration been much more aggressive in defending liberty after the Russians, in violation of the treaty they signed in 1993, illegally invaded Ukraine. And to hear a Republican strategist not stand up for liberty, but instead side with a dictator who's hostile to the United States, is an astonishing development in America. It's absolutely reflective of what's happened to the Republican Party, whereas Mitt Romney, the party's 2012 presidential candidate, said recently, millions of people in my party, the Republican Party, don't believe in democracy. And I think that's correct. And I think Mr. Klink's statements show that he's for might and power, not for liberty all around the world and democracy.
I'm also joined by Fred Weir. He's a senior journalist based in Moscow. He's with the Christian Science Monitor. Mr. Weir, thanks very much for being with us. You've seen the developments in the last 48, 72 hours or so. Where does Putin now stand with the path to a peace process? We've heard what America has to say. We've only got a couple of statements from the Kremlin. Where is Russia placed at the moment?
Well, first of all, let me speak to this question of who's winning the war. I sit here in Moscow. Do my shopping. I live in the civilian economy, which is quite unaffected by sanctions. and I follow the war on multiple Telegram channels, including Ukrainian ones, and everybody agrees that the Russians are pressing forward. Slowly, painfully, I don't know whether they're doing it on donkey carts or not, but if they are, they are moving forward and the Ukrainians are falling back. There are maps which are coming from Ukrainian Telegram channels, which will show you that. The Ukrainians are losing the war. Slowly, they're fighting valiantly. I think they deserve respect, but the Russians are winning, and all the mathematics suggest that they will continue to do so. As for Putin, I think he's proceeding. I think in the Kremlin, they're very, very happy with these developments. I mean, very quickly, a lot of things have broken their way. I don't think they count on Trump being consistently pro-Russian. I don't think he is. I think he's tactically trying to get ahead of reality. And the reality is the Russians are winning. Ukraine is losing. Trump doesn't want to own defeat. He wants to be the framer of a peace settlement that's profitable for him, as he sees it, for America. And as long as the Russians will play along, I think he will be fine with that. What the Russians get out of this, and they have gotten it already, it's a done deal pretty much, is an across-the-board normalization of relations with the United States. You have to remember there was scorched earth virtually since 2014, so over a decade. You know, I'm a Canadian. I live in Moscow. I can't even send a letter by post to Canada because there's no connection between the postal services. All across the board in the entire establishment of the countries, there is all the links, channels have been broken, frozen. Now, all that is going to be restored. And gradually, I guess, economic relations will be restored. And somehow, a peace will come out of that, which Putin has continually referred to the agreement, the aborted agreement in March, April of 2022 between Russia and Ukraine. It's pretty well known, and its basic features are Ukrainian neutrality, that is, renouncing NATO membership, demilitarization, substantial Ukrainian demilitarization, and rights for Russian speakers. Russia also has made concessions in that agreement. They agreed to put Crimea up to a 15-year consultation period to determine its status. They agreed that Ukraine can join the EU. So the Russians are clearly preparing for the existence of an independent Ukraine as long as it will not be a Western battering ram, as they see it, a member of NATO. But
somehow half a second, Mr. Wade, let me just keep the strike rotating, as it were. I'm running short on time. Dan Morrison, I think the worry which President Macron reflected today is that while everything that Fred says, you know, may be correct and that maybe Russia is interested in a peace at the moment, we've seen efforts at bringing about a peace between Russia and Ukraine in the past fail. And therefore, if America doesn't backstop this, and if America isn't willing to be aggressive with Russia, then there is no real guarantee that Russia won't restart this in some way, shape, or form. Do you believe that that's what this might end up being a problem about? Can Russia be trusted?
I think part of the American case is that if we have a financial stake in Russia, that if American companies have a financial stake in Ukraine and in its safety and success, that is part of the guarantee. That's the case that is coming out of the White House, or part of the case that's coming out of the White House. You know, Joe Biden said nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine, and Trump's position is that time's up and pay up, and that's where we are. So the money matters, both in, yes, the transactional sense that the president brings to most arrangements, but also as a way that if we have a financial stake, we, the United States, has a financial stake in Ukraine, that itself is seen as a bar to future Russian aggression after a U.S. negotiated settlement.
Mr. Johnson, I see the point that you're making about you know, what this war is actually about. If it is about fighting for liberty, then America deciding not to do that seems to sort of fly in the face of what America stood for on the continent, particularly against the Soviet Union earlier and Russia now. But at the end of the day, would you not agree that Ukraine cannot outlast Russia? They've done incredibly well, successfully in this war. They've inflicted massive casualties on Russia, militarily, in terms of infrastructure, all sorts of things. But at the end of the day, Volodymyr Zelensky has no options because he's not likely to be able to outlast the Russians. And therefore, everything that we are talking about has changed. And that gives Trump the edge in the position that he's arguing about.
Well, in the long run, the Ukrainians might not be able to survive, partly because the U.S. response was very slow and measured in providing war material. But there's serious discussion going on in Poland, Germany, Denmark, France, and the U.K. about upping their military aid, because they recognize that Vladimir Putin is on the record all over the place, that he thinks the worst thing that happened in the last century was the collapse of the Soviet empire. He intends to go back and conquer these countries. And I've been to Europe and talked with leaders who are very concerned that if Putin is not stopped, he will go into Estonia, Latvia, Poland, Lithuania, Slovakia, and other countries over a period of time. He can't do it right away because well more than half of his war material has been destroyed in this without losing a single American life on the battlefield.
Absolutely.
So I think that Europe stepping up can still stop this effort.
I take your point. And I'm just interrupting because I'm out of time. But I think the question, therefore, is how soon can Europe step up? Do they have the industrial capability to keep fueling Ukraine? And does Ukraine have the number of soldiers? But I'm afraid I'm going to have to leave it there. Fascinating conversation. I suppose none of us know at this stage where this is all headed, but hopefully there will be a peace. Will it last, I think, is the question. Thank you all very much for being with us. Time now for us to take this short break.